Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur. Sits in the Duck South Studios on this Monday morning. Opening it up with me today, Bradley Ramsey. Bradley, you should have been there Friday, brother. NWTF was hopping.
You know, I have never made that show, and I really, really want to go. I was surprised I didn't see a lot of updates from you, little video clips and stuff. It was a good one, huh?
It was. That is one of the best consumer shows out there.
That's what I've heard. I haven't had the leisure to make that weekend happen for myself in the last few years.
Not only are you at the Opryland Hotel, but if you look at this industry and look at the faces of it, all of the faces are there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of guys that are there that are not just turkey guys. It's everybody in the industry.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody that doesn't represent a brand that's not there. I mean, no matter what, at the Primos meet, you got Will, Jimmy, and Troy. The one that kind of surprised me about Brad wasn't there this year kind of surprised me, but you know, all the big names. You know, Fred was there. Fred Zink was there. Waddell's there. Anybody that you can name that is the face of a brand, they're usually at this show.
What was your highlight from it, Rock?
It's the picture that I posted Friday night.
Yeah.
Well, Kenny and I were sitting at the Primo's booth talking. Kenny McLaughlin, good friend, he's part of Duck South. And anyway, Kenny walked up and we were talking, and my son had been back there behind me playing. Of course, a lot of you listen to this podcast know who Big Meat is. And I've seen him in videos that I posted on Duck South. When I introduced him to Kenny, Kenny had this box call in his hand. And he said, "Whoa, Big Meat." He said, "Man, will you sign my box call?"
Uh-huh.
And it just so happened, Roy Ann snapped a picture of it while it was going on. And I thought that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
You know,
awesome.
And just because in the past, people have walked up to Wilson and, you know, "Hey, man, I found you." You know, they act like it makes little Wilson, Big Meat, feel important.
Oh yeah, that's great for a kid, man. He got to sign an autograph. He's gonna talk about that.
It was pretty cool. So Kenny made him feel real important, signing a box that a box call was in.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Spent a lot of long time at Spitz and Jed Lamb. They had a kind of a booth, kind of to facing each other, that took up an aisleway. Jed Lamb, you know, you kind of been seeing their videos come out that's you got Spence and Rolling Thunder. But they had a really cool spot. Spent some time over there. It was really good. I met people that I've talked to on the phone a bunch, but never have talked to them face to face.
Right.
It was good.
Right. Those kind of events are great for things like that. You really get to, you know, it's good for the public and it's good for, you know, people in the industry and in the media, because it does. It gives a personal aspect to what we do. And as big as this outdoor industry can seem, it's still a very small community.
Oh, it is. It is very small. It is a small piece of pie in the real world of the economy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was really neat to be walking down an aisle and people to stop you and say, man, I love the podcast, because that happened a lot. And that was at a turkey banquet or turkey consumer show. So
right.
That was very encouraging.
You know, even as few times as I hunted this year, I had a couple people that, you know, that pricked up their ears when they heard my name and you know, reference the podcast, you know, without me bringing it up. And it's fun. I mean, it's interesting to see how many people are actually listening, and you know, it kind of, like I said, it brings our world closer together. And these people who wouldn't know me from Adam's House Cat, other than, you know, her having listened to the podcast, actually bought a wax canvas jacket from a kid, an antique one, the other day. And he's like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize who you were. I'm like, well, yeah, I ain't nobody, man. It's just, you know, I'm a guy who's addicted to old timey stuff, you know, but it was cool.
Well, I want to tell you something that happened last week. What made me think about it was, you know, when I'm at a show like that and I'm walking around talking to people that I've only met once or twice, the first thing I do when I walk up to somebody, shake their hand and say, hey, I'm Rocky LaFleur, blah, blah, blah. We hunted together a couple of years ago. Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. They're, you know, and to make them feel comfortable with the situation.
Sure.
Because they're not sitting there trying to think of your name the whole time.
Right.
Like I walked up to Fred and I said, hey, Fred, Rocky LaFleur, but we hung together in Oklahoma last year. Oh, man, hey, we killed the crap out of blah, 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 blah. And we sat there and talked for 10 or 15 minutes. But I ran into a different situation last week outside of the banquet. And I want to ask you if you have wisdom on this. Because you are the elder one, the old two.
Okay, I'll take that.
All right, so I think I've told you, because you were talking about you and your wife had just bought a vehicle. I guess it was a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Well, I told you, I said, yeah, I think we're fixing to be in the market. You know, both buyers are 180,000, which we drive the wheels off of our vehicles. They're both 6 or 7 years old. All right. So the last time I bought a vehicle was in 2013 at a dealership in Memphis. It was a Suburban with very, very low miles. I want to say it had 18,000 miles on it. And it was at Watney. Watney was the dealership. It's a known name dealership. And I'm getting to the point of the story. So I called the guy. I remember the manager, the general manager of the dealership. He was a duck hunter. And we sat around and talked for 20 or 30 minutes while they were trying to get all the paperwork sorted out. But anyway, I called him up last week to ask him if he had anything. Kind of like the guy. I want to buy from a fellow duck hunter.
Sure.
Called this guy up. I don't know if this guy's got an eidetic memory or what he has. Dude, he remembered every detail of my life and everything that I told him that day. It was amazing.
That's a good salesman, like, is what that is.
Dude, it was like we were long. Most salesmen, though, that are, well, yeah, nah, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say most salesmen don't have good memories like that, but the great ones do.
Yes.
About people.
Yes.
That make it really, really far. I thought, man, I'm telling you, he remembered your wife's a vet. Y'all owned the clinic in Greenville. You had the lodge in Mississippi, blah, blah, blah. I mean, three kids, he named their names.
Like, wow.
It don't mind. Dude, I'm buying from this guy again. This is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I got a good friend who's in the oil and gas industry that's that way. If I could ever just plug a cord into his mind and download his Rolodex and details, I would be the greatest oil field salesman ever.
And that's why they're in those positions, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, the people that have that knack, and I've seen this in some sales stuff before then, that 90% of what they do is relationship and 10% of it sales. But they account for probably 90% of the sales in their company. Because they just, like we've said before in this podcast, it's all about relationships.
For those that can't, is it because of our brain is not wired like these people? Is it because we're a little more selfish than these people? What is a good practice to remember all this stuff? It's not like this guy went and pulled up a book of notes that he had written about me that day. He just picked up a phone that he was walking by, and, you know, when I told him his name, he just starts going through a list of details. To me, it sounded like he was out in the lobby of the dealership.
I wish I knew if there was a trick to it, because I have one of these brains that I can introduce myself to somebody, speak to them, and within 2 seconds, I've forgotten their name. It's just terrible. I mean, my wife kids me about it because, like, I can't remember actors and movie stars' names. And you'd think that, you know, somebody would be able to remember who was in movie X or Y. I can't remember. It's impossible for me. I have to write it down. And I've tried the little tricks of, you know, different, you know, brain tricks to try to make yourself remember them. Names are just something that just doesn't stick with me. So I do what you do. I always reintroduce myself and try to pass it off so that I'm not, you know, not remember who this person was. And it happens to me all the time. Oh, yeah, we've met before. We did so-and-so together. And I'm like, oh, yeah, good to see you again. It doesn't stick in my mind. I don't know how people do it.
All right, I'm going to let you into an intimate detail. Seems like I'll let you on some, everybody that listens every once in a while, but it kind of shows the craziness of Rocky LaFleur. See, I hate situations like Fridays. You need to do them because you need to put names and faces and shake hands. But from a brain perspective, it doesn't work well for me. When I'm in a huge crowd of people, see, I'm a one-on-one guy. Let's go to dinner. You know, let's grab a beer. Let's grab a glass of tea, whatever floats your boat.
Right.
But in a huge crowd, my brain, the synapse is just firing 100 miles an hour. I hear you introduce yourself. I hear these things that we're talking about, but I hear all this stuff going on around me. And it's like I can't remember it.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, for me, I'm what people call a forced extrovert. I'm like you. I'd rather sit down with one person around a campfire or something like that, chat with them. But I find myself in large social situations a lot. And people are like, oh, you seem great. You seem comfortable. I'm like, man, I don't remember any of it. You know, it's a stress on my system to be in large crowds of people like that. And I do it, and upon reflection, I have fun, but do I remember who I spoke to, what their name was, all those details that this salesman you're speaking of can do? Nope. It it's impossible for me. I have to have somebody come back and, like, you know, give me the instant replay of what I did and, you know, who I spoke to. And I don't have the excuse of drinking anymore. I hadn't had a drink in 20 years. And I still can't remember people's names when I meet them in a social situation.
But the thing about it is that I hate to pull out a notebook right there in front of them because I'm a notebook guy. I'll write things down.
You see, I'll never forget when I
got out of college and the first sales job I ever had, how to win, you know, they made us read how to win friends and influence people. Still basic sure. principles I live by. But you throw me into the wildness of a 9,000 people, you know, around you, it goes wild for me. I can't focus. I can't tunnel vision.
Yeah, you know, today in today's world where we have cell phones and all that kind of stuff, nobody really gives out business cards as much anymore. That used to be a big help to me. But now people want to say, well, just give me your number. I'll text you, and you can add me as a contact. And I've gotten to where I just hand people my phone and say, here, just type yourself in. Because I'm not good. If I get a random text saying, hey, met you at the show, I'm going to have no idea who that person was.
Yeah.
I've got several, you know, contacts on my phone that are just like, you know, field rep for X company. And I don't have any idea who his name is because they just sent me a text saying, hey, we met at the, you know, so-and-so pad the other day. And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. You know?
Well, you know, this world is slipping really bad, Bradley. You know, in the past couple of weeks before I remembered about the dealership, David Watney and in Memphis, I called them a couple other dealerships. And I've seen how far that we slipped in business. And what I mean by that is, let me ask you this. If we set a ground floor on texting, a money amount that you can ethically and etiquettely, if that's a word, text about, what is that floor or that ceiling? The ceiling amount, not floor.
Mine personally would be anything over about $200.
Yep, you cannot text. See, I'm with you on that. Mine's $200 to $500, somewhere in there.
Yeah, $200 to $500. I mean, if it's something I'd feel comfortable taking care of over PayPal, okay, we're good. As long as I know you, trust you, have some reason to believe that it's a reasonable transaction. But if I'm talking with a business, don't text me. No, sir.
No! If I'm buying a vehicle from you that's $40,000, don't text me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I may get in trouble with my own bosses over this, but, you know, and when I send you a text, don't send me an emoji of a thumbs up or something like that. It drives me crazy. Now, I'm a writer, so I'm a little bit of a word snob, so I don't like texting anyway. But if I send you words, don't send me back a picture of a thumb or a smiley face.
That is not appropriate in business. Never.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And, you know, maybe it's just the way I was raised. I mean, my wife picks on me because I can't go anywhere without a belt on and my shirt tucked in. But, you know, if you're doing business with me, speak to me. Shake my hand. You know, I don't even like handling most of it over a phone call. I want to sit and look the person in the eyes.
Roy Ann and I were texting. Another situation came up. It was about 40 acres of land outside Oxford, and
right.
I'm not gonna. It was way over the way exponential.
Oh yeah.
Over
oh yeah.
Our ceiling, but she just wanted to text me. Screw you! This is a huge deal. This is the kind you get down and dirty about. You talk.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I could handle some of that over a phone call, but on those types of transactions, I still want to be face to face with a person. It's just a different mode of business, and I don't, you know, I'm the old coot on the rocking chair screaming at the kids to get off my lawn, I guess, but I just can't deal with it. If somebody wants to deal with me on text on something like that, no, not doing it.
I mean, 20 years from now, are we just going to be a text society, never talk?
Yeah, hopefully by that time I'll be in the woods where I can't even see my neighbor's chimney smoke, and I won't have to deal with people anyway.
Hey, speaking of people, let's talk about the big topic that came up this weekend. Whoa!
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like you speak in generalizations, dipping your foot in, and man. Are you dipping your toe in the water, speaking in generalizations, and by doing that, it's like hanging bait out to an alligator and you get chomped? That's what's happened to me.
Right.
Because I guess in social media world, you need to preface everything you say, you know, either sarcasm, say it needs to be said before you start your sentence, or... this is not my personal belief.
Right.
Start off the sentence. The topic about the dog getting shot.
Right.
Let's spend a couple of minutes on this. Awful. Awful. If you have not read the article, the guy's sick. Psychologically, tons of problems. Anger issues. You know, it's been noted in the psychological world that if you harm animals, you got some huge problem
issues. Yeah.
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 You know, a lot of people that ended up being, what do you call them? Serial killers hurt animals when they were young.
Right. Right.
All right. Now, the guy was out duck hunting. Let's walk through this story, Bradley. Correct me if I'm wrong. Guy's out duck hunting in New Mexico, which that one kind of shocked me. You and I have talked about New Mexico duck hunting, but really? You know, you think of New Mexico, you think of a desert. All right, but anyway, you had three ducks down on the water. The dog would not go retrieve them. From the sound, you know, there was at least two people there hunting. We know that.
Right.
Don't know if there's any more, but just from the article, it was the shooter and his buddy. Dog would not go retrieve the ducks. The guy proceeded. I don't know if he shot him while he was in water. I don't know if he shot him sitting on the bank or at a dog stand. Didn't get that detail, but he shoots the dog twice because he wouldn't retrieve. And according to animal rights that supposedly has information about it, the dog's guts were hanging out, and the friend has to finish the dog off. Okay, that's the details supposedly that we know, right?
Or that's all that I've gotten out of the story.
All right. Now, I read the article. So all these people are going mad and on Duck South with reason to be. And I just made a simple generalization. I can remember deer and rabbit dog, quail dogs.
Yeah.
If they didn't work, they'd put a bullet in their back of their head.
Right.
Because you did not, at that time, want to put that burden off on somebody else.
Right.
Everybody around you usually, you know, same general income stance.
Right.
And usually you were hunting to provide for your family. So if that tool, that hammer didn't nail the nail in, you threw the hammer away, wouldn't got a new one.
Right.
That's the way that animals were viewed. That's the general thing that I was trying to get at.
Yeah.
That whether the pointer, whether the beagle, you know, I never really heard a lot about that when it came to retrievers back then.
No, and I think, you know, I grew up around deer dogs and not so much bird dogs, but deer dogs, coon dogs, and things like that. And I can remember, you know, seeing dogs put down, whether it was for performance reasons or for health issues. That I was like, well, it's not worth the, you know, and I'm not putting a value on an animal's life, but it's the ethics of the time or the economics of the time where, you know, I'm, like I said, it's a tool. I'm not going to continue to spend money on something, you know, whether it be a health issue or whether it be a performance issue. That day and time has changed, and, you know, me personally, I could never do something like that to a dog that was mine and is trained and all this kind of stuff. It's just not possible. A dog that was aggressive or a dog with something like that, yeah, I've had to do that before. I just, you know, like you said, when you have to qualify anything you say, you know, people get really upset and think, oh, well, you're okay with this guy shooting this dog. No, absolutely not. But, you know, people are judging it through the lens of today's society, where some of us, like you and I, that came up in a different time, animals were just viewed differently. Right or wrong, that was the framework we existed within.
A horse, man. There's nothing. A retriever and a horse are two of the most humane, close to humans,
mm-hmm.
there is. It's a man's best friend, per se. Two different species, but don't want to do anything but please their owner. To me, that's the way I view those two animals. But anyway, when did it flip? When did it flip in the sense of, and I said this last Monday, Josh and I, you know, in all the craziness of Scout, which,
mm-hmm.
wish nothing but the best for them. I really do. But see people making posts or comments on all these posts, would they go all out if it were a human? Shot, missing. When did it flip? When did we start caring about animals more than we did our fellow man?
I don't know where that flip, where that switch happened, Rocky. I mean, it's I like to think that my fellow human beings, if someone had, you know, posted that their child was lost, that there would have been the same outcry. If there was a post about, you know, someone shooting a human being, that there would be that much outcry. But I think we've become desensitized to human tragedy and more emotionally tied into things like animals for whatever reason. I think our media has desensitized us to human tragedy and hypersensitized us to animals because they are supposedly, you know, dependent on us and they have, you know, for whatever reason. I think we flipped that script, and I don't understand, you know, I don't understand where our nation's soul is in that matter.
Let me ask you this. We'll throw a curveball at you. Not really a curve. It's just a simple, it's moving just a little bit. 90 mile an hour, right down the middle, moving a little bit. did this happen when we brought animals in the house? Because years ago, it was rare that you saw an animal living inside a house with humans.
That's a possibility. I mean, you know, as we
met, did we humanize them?
Well, I think we did, and I think, you know, I think media has humanized them. We, you know, to use the big, you know, big words like mayonnaise, we anthropomorphized animals. We gave them more human characteristics than they might possibly have. You know, and
what a great point that is. Golly, great point.
You know, and as we do more research and study, we do find out animals have larger brains and memories and stuff like that. But we have put our own attributes onto them that they may not necessarily have. Look, a family dog loves you immensely. I mean, and it's beyond just, you know, you supply me food. You know, there is a bond between a human and a dog. At the same time, we want to make them in our society
equal to a person, and I don't. That's an apple and oranges comparison. It's two different things. I would never condone in any way cruelty towards animals. And that sounds so strange coming from someone who goes out and kills them and tries to kill them and eat them. But, you know, where I draw that line is this is, you know, this is a game animal versus a domestic animal. And I wouldn't go out and just be cruel to a possum for the heck of it. Cruelty towards animals is a sickness in someone's mind. It's a larger symptom in my way of thinking. But I cannot place the value of an animal's life above the value of a human's life. And there's a segment of our population that wants to do that. And I think part of that slippery slope that's happened is by the anthropomorphization of them through movies and Disney and, you know, and social media and all of these things.
I think that the middle of the road people that take the middle of the road stance on this are good people, you know, and they have a good belief system when it comes to this. Now, you've got the other end of the road that have no feelings for animals.
Right, you know, right.
But, and then on the other side, see, I've seen the other side of this. I've seen people that would rather take a bullet themselves than see a vicious pit bull put down.
Right. Right.
Just ravenous, not rabba. These animals are wild and would not let you humanely put these animals down. And they have invaded the animal world. And kind of just taken over it. The you know, nobody wants to see animals in poor conditions. A horse, right. Cow, dogs, these puppy mills, you know, you see stuff back in, I remember in the 90s, invading these puppy mills was a big thing.
Right.
That was a huge thing for state
animal welfare.
You saw it all across the South. But like I said, I can't see, because I've been around some of these people, if a child was missing out in the woods, they would get, I can't see them getting more involved if it was a child walking around in the woods at Matthew's break.
Well, you know, I think
I
think society absolves itself of that responsibility to a certain degree by saying that's the authority's responsibility. If the child is lost, well, there's human structures and governmental agencies and such like that and that are responsible for that. Let the professionals handle that. And there's a false sense that, you know, well, if I don't go help look for this dog, nobody else will. You know, when we hear about, you know, kids going missing, there's often news about search parties and things like that. But unfortunately, those stories don't grab attention like the heartstring pull of a dog going missing, and I don't understand why. We have devalued human life to the extent that nobody, you know, other than an Amber Alert on your phone, the number of children that go missing in this country every day is astounding. It's frightening. And
it is.
You know, we've become desensitized.
I'll tell you, if you think this guy's a bad guy, I'm going to leave you with this point. I'm going to leave you with this final point because I see it with my wife being in bed all the time. Keeping an animal alive to its last waking moment with cancer, when you could humanely put that animal down, and that animal is suffering for months just because you want to keep it alive one more month.
Saving yourself from the pain of loss. You know, that bothers me. I mean, this guy is bad. There's nothing good about what this gentleman did. And I won't call him a gentleman. Doesn't deserve that term. But
no, he doesn't.
My way of, to my way of thinking as well, when you prolong an animal's suffering because you're trying to save yourself the grief of its passing, that is a tragedy as well for that animal's life. You have taken that animal.
I think you're just as bad as that guy. Just if you're keeping one alive a couple of months, because you don't know the pain. He can't scream out. Animals don't yell out in pain a lot of times.
No, in fact, most animals will try to hide their pain from their owners.
So you're just as almost as bad as that guy. Yeah, keeping them comfortable while they're still getting around. But I'm talking about the people that dogs are immobile for a month.
Yeah. No. You know, I'm gonna circle back to something you said earlier about the comments you made on Facebook and people, how people reacted. We have become so ingrained in, if you're not with me, you're against me, that the middle of the road people don't speak up. And that if you say something, somebody's got, if they disagree with you slightly, they're going to take the polar opposite stance and launch into attack mode. And this is why we can't get anything done in our government, in our society, because it's always polar opposite. There's nobody listens to the common sense middle of the road of anything.
I agree with that. Little man's not real loud. They just go about their business.
Yeah.
The polar right, polar left are screaming as loud as they can.
And you know what? That's the media keeps gobbling it up, spitting it back out to us.
Oh, man.
Jeez. And here we are as part of some fringe element of the media somewhere in that picture, I as a writer and podcast, co-host with you. But the bulk of our media, what comes through on mainstream media, is so polarly opposed on both sides that no one gets the middle of the ground opinion where most people live. And it's the same thing when you post my opinion of X on this topic. Most of what you're going to hear about is someone who's the exact opposite, wants to call you everything but a child of God. And I don't understand it. I don't understand why we have to define ourselves by our opposition to someone else's opinion.
I have a great idea for any entrepreneur that's listening to this that's a young man. You want to be a millionaire? Start a weather and news service that just gives the weather and the news. No opinion.
Just the facts.
Make millions. You can make millions.
I hope that's true, and somebody will do it, because you can't get anything but opinion. I have a very good friend of mine in the waterfowling world. He and I hold some pretty drastically different political opinions on all kinds of topics. But we both have talked about the fact that we can't watch the news anymore because I've got someone giving me their opinion, not telling me the news, not telling me the facts. I don't need your opinion. I'll form my own. I'm a grown-up man. I can look at the facts and make my own conclusions.
Just want to hear the weather when I watch the Weather Channel. That's it. we need to get to Rob. It is Monday. You're going to have some strong opinions on there coming up just a minute. But Bradley, hey, I enjoyed it. Went a little longer than we were supposed to, but I think that it's good stuff. It was worth it.
Somebody will get our opinions wrong, Rocky. Don't worry. We'll get hammered, yelled down for it, but that's all right.
All right, brother. Well, look, we will talk again this week. Thank you again for being here, but let's get to that interview with Rob right now. Hey, guys, like I told you just a few seconds ago, Mr. Rob Kroom, it is Monday. Rob, I got to ask you, were you fishing or were you in Nashville? Which was it?
I was fishing. I wanted to come to Nashville, and then last minute, I realized it was going to rain 47 inches this week, so I was like, man, I got to go fish while I can fish.
There was a lot of stir on social media whether you were in Nashville and nobody could find you like last year, or kind of knew and heard if you're fishing.
Well, last year I was injured. I had my knee, all my tendons and every meniscus and everything was all messed up in my knee, so I couldn't get around real well. So I really couldn't get out and galley around and hang out with everybody. But this year I would have been the social butterfly. But I saw the weather and everything, and I wanted to come, and I wanted to come on Thursday. It just didn't work out. So I'll be there next year. I really like that thing, and I like going. So I'll make it a point to get there next year. But I had to skip this year.
So how was the fishing?
Awesome. Very good. Fishing's real good in Kansas and Arkansas. White River was at about 57 foot. It was good fishing. We fished about 48 foot deep. Good stuff.
Well, a lot of things happened over the weekend. So if you were mining for gold, this is one of those you shout back at the top of the cave, man, we got some, we found it, we hit it. So when it comes to the list of topics, and I've gotten to where now, you know, knowing Monday's coming throughout the week from Monday to Monday, I'll just start, if I see something that you probably got an interesting take on, a hot take on, I'll put it in my notes in my phone. All right, one of the biggest things that happened over the weekend that I know that should be pretty good, beer showers fell in Starkville. And every leader from Mississippi State went wild.
Yeah. You know, that little brother's always trying to keep up. They got that new stadium that's got, like, futons and cheap hotel furniture and, like, a $400 flat screen that everybody's oohing and aahing about and some fake granite countertops. And they decided they were going to throw beer showers.
Which is, this is tradition throughout history. You know, you throw your drink in the air when something good happens. Ole Miss started doing it when they started hitting home, when, you know, years ago when they hit home runs when the students were allowed in right field. So to give some of you people that don't understand, that's listening outside of the Mississippi triangle right there where most Ole Miss and State fans live, that's a little backstory. So, but they did it. Mississippi State fans, students, did it Friday night. You know, a couple of home runs got hit. They threw their beer in the air. People, leaders at Mississippi State went crazy.
Yeah, they, you know, man, they were playing, I think they were playing, what's that school for, the delinquent kids in Mississippi? They were playing some junior high travel team and hit a home run or two, and all of a sudden they start throwing beer shots. They've got to realize how unbelievably ignorant they look. And the whole thing that's so funny about the whole deal is they spend all day long defending themselves, talking about how that they don't want to be us and they're better than us and all this, and then they just copy us. I'm like, guys, don't, like, y'all realize that, like, you're doing exactly what we do?
So many little things that they do.
Yeah, I mean, just be yourself. Just take it. Just realize and accept the fact that you live on a cow pasture and there's three bars and that's what you do. Like, don't try to be Ole Miss and Oxford. It's not going to happen. Estes, I was messing with him about it, and he was like, at least we're not Oxford. We're better than that city. Like, who would think that? Who would really, in their mind, that's been to both places, be like, man, Starkville is so much nicer than Oxford. That's the most ignorant thing I've ever heard in my life. And I've heard some dumb stuff. I've said some dumb stuff, but that is by far the most Homer, crazy, I drink the Kool-Aid thing I've ever heard.
Did you hear what Bruce Farrell said after after Auburn beat Vanderbilt the other night? They were talking about how many fans traveled to Vanderbilt to see them play. It's a great, he said, it almost felt like a home crowd. He said, you know, the first place we have, the hardest time we get to have in getting our fans to is Starks. Phil. Bulldog Twitter was going nuts because he said the hardest place to get people coaching.
I read on Twitter where he said that. I forgot it though because I just take everything that happens down there and those guys say just kind of like one ear out the other. They say the craziest stuff. Like okay, first of all, Auburn, like the town of Auburn's pretty cool. It's okay. Like, you know, I've been there several times and it's all right. I mean, I like it. But I mean, they're an ag school, you know. I mean, they don't want to admit it, but they got a lot of ag and stuff, and they don't act like idiots about it. Why? Like, we get it. Y'all got a base. Oh my God, I forgot this. Esty said that their stadium was nicer than like 20% of Major League Baseball's stadiums. I'm like, dude, the population in Starkville compared to the population for the whatever the Toronto Blue Jays? Are you kidding me? Who cares? You can buy a big diamond and you can buy a big CZ and you can buy a big fake diamond and it's still a fake diamond. You can say what you want and pretend all you want, but it is what it is. At the end of the day, what you got is what you got. And if you want to throw all your eggs in the basket and act like, oh, Mississippi State, we got the best stadium. They ring freaking cowbells, for God's sakes. You ring cowbells at a game. You can't even hear. It's deafening. Why, like, who does that? Like, if they not decided it's 2019, hey, let's put the cowbells down and just hoot and holler and get some sort of cool fight song and make, like, some hottie-totty chant. Like, they should start a chant that's like, hey, hey, we have cows and a good vet school. How about now? They should do that. Stop ringing the damn cowbells. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, nobody wants to hear that. Nobody. Like, what? Does anybody like hearing a bunch of cowbells ringing? Honestly, like, what, like, my God. You know what? Hey. To me, ringing cowbells to me is like being a professional hot dog eating contest. Like, you ate 96 hot dogs in 10 minutes. Like, what did you prove?
You can put a lot in your mouth.
Well, that's what those cowbells are. It's a lot going on.
Hey, that wasn't the only – the beer showers weren't the only rough or bad thing going on in Starkville this weekend. You know, building the apartments overlooking the baseball field may not have been a good thing after all. There was an act of – what's the word? Is it –
fornication?
Yeah, voyeurism? Is that the word I'm looking for? You know, where you have sexual intent to everybody else's pleasure that watches?
Yeah, I mean...
They moved the beds, everything out on the balcony overlooking the baseball field. Wild, wild stuff.
You know, I mean, they did it to themselves. If they got a problem with that... then whatever. If you don't have a problem with cowbells, but you have a problem with two kids having sex on a balcony, come on, dude. All they're doing is being smart. I get it. It was probably a hell of a time. The dudes, I have no problem with it. I think that's probably the most normal, sensible thing they've done in years. I mean, I know this is a news flash for these guys, but God gave men body parts and women other body parts to go together. And there's this thing that people do, and it's fun. So, yeah, I commend the kid. It's awesome. And the girl, good job. You know, the walk of shame isn't bad from the dude. They probably thought you were just going to, like, pick up your grill from the night before or something. There was no, I mean, the Walk of Shame had to be amazing because she didn't come out of the men's dorm. I have no problem whatsoever with that. And I'm proud of them.
The Walk of Shame in Oxford on Sunday mornings. Whoa.
Coming out of Stockard or Ken Compton or whatever and rolling out of there. And the thing is, there was no way around that. You can't hide coming out from what you wore to Forrester's or the library and get back to your dorm or get back to where you're going without people realizing what happened.
Let me ask you this. Is it just the badge that you get of honor that these girls, they still have the skirts or the pants that they wore on the previous night, but usually they stole a fraternity shirt to put on.
Yeah,
is that the badge?
Exactly.
Is that the medal you get?
Yeah, we used to joke about that and actually have a whole thing about that. I'm not going to say it on the air, but yeah, we used to actually have a whole thing about that where if they had a certain color shirt and it was a certain shirt from an event we had, then we knew what was up. And it was hilarious. And it was always the same ones that had them. And you're like, ha ha. But, I mean, it was really funny. And, yeah, that, I mean, hey, look, you think girls – I mean, we could sit here and joke all day about dudes getting hooked up, but girls want to hook up too. They just don't want to be considered, you know, hoes. Sorry to say that, and I don't mean it demeaning. I'm just saying there's a double standard. So it is what it that's what it is. So just take your walk of shame in stride.
I got to ask you this, because speaking of hooking up, one of the things that flashed across my Facebook, or I can't remember if it was Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, but at any point in taking a couple's picture, seriously think about this. Think about it and then give us your educated response. Is it ever proper to take a tongue wrap picture where you're face cheek to cheek and tongues are wrapping to each other, touching? Is that ever proper?
I've never heard of that, but it sounds horrific. And if somebody wanted me to do that, I would get out of the relationship so fast that I would look like that Forrest Gump gif running down the road.
You know what I'm talking about? They take the selfie pic, but it's not a selfie. It's up the couple. They're cheek to cheek, and their tongues are like coming out the sides and like trying to touch each other.
I have no idea where you found this on the internet, but I've never even seen or heard of this. But if I do see it, I'm going to comment. Speaking of commenting, there was a post last week about Sicko Waiters or Benelli shotguns or something. I don't remember. But I said something, and a dude with a double profile, like, tried to smart off to me. And I was like, dude, you share a Facebook profile with your wife. Like, don't ever, ever come at me again.
I bet that if you share a profile with your wife, you tongue wrap.
Yes, and it was one of those, it wasn't like Derek and Nancy, it was Derek and Nancy. Or whatever the name was. It was the N. It wasn't even like, you know, so-and-so, 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 which is still ridiculous. It's the, you know, who cheated on who deal. But, yeah, don't ever talk smack to me if you've got a double profile with your wife. Don't even think about it because, no.
I got to ask you this. Speaking of waiters, Drake released their waiters. They're big. Infomercial, webisode, commercial, online, social media, with their waiters. Any words? Any first thoughts?
I hope they have a flap or like some sort of like body condom you can wear for when they leave.
The cool thing about it, I saw they had a 2-year warranty on them.
Ooh, woo, 2 years. So because they know that a lot of these kids buy these waiters and get these frat. Damn, I'm not going to go there. They get these waiters, and they go hunting 3 days a year and post their log pics. And so they're like, man, we do a two-year warranty. They're only going to wear them for, you know, we're going to wear them 6 hunts in 2 years, so what does it matter? I mean, what can you possibly do in 6 hunts to a pair of waiters? And a lot of these people act like, they're like, oh, my waiters don't leak. And I'm like, where do y'all hunt? They're like, oh, man, I got a pit over there. I'm like, yeah, you sit in a pit. You're in ankle-deep water. Of course they don't leak. And then I'm like, well, how do y'all go? Well, we take a ranger to the blind, and we step out of the ranger and get in the blind and then hide the ranger. I'm like, so your waders don't leak? They're like, no. I'm like, here's your sign, buddy. You don't get wet. They only leak when they're in the water. People are so funny.
Yeah. Hey, one of the people that I saw in Nashville on Friday was David Frisbee. I gotta give you this nugget, and I will not put it in the description. But David Frisbee from Drake, you and I were talking, and I said, yeah, man, I'm good friends with Patrick Graham. Oh, man, he is a vital part of our marketing campaign. I'm like, yep. Jones hat.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get, like, 70% off and get to buy all that cool gear and that Jones hat, you better be getting compensated more for wearing that stupid hat. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, I get it. Wow, I'm a pro staffer. Oh, really? What do you do? Well, I buy $500,000 worth of decoys, but I get them for $350,000. Oh, cool. Good job. Hey, what about, speaking of that, what about the Max Snow Goose competition?
Woo! I've had a few conversations about that the past week. Two groups really got into the geese. Yeah, I didn't know that you had to take a lie detector test when you got back.
Well, they said that, but I mean, did they really do it?
I don't.
I mean, did anybody really have to do it?
What's the word? What have you heard? The word going around.
I haven't heard anything, but there's people all upset about those dudes that did like 136 the first day, and they lost by, I think, like 3 or 4. The other group did the same thing the second day. I don't know if they killed them. I don't know how. I don't care. It doesn't matter. They're freaking snuggies. But and I think they lost by a couple, but everybody's all tore up. They're like, they shot them on the water. I'm like, who cares? The whole object is to kill them. Like, yeah. What? The object is to kill them.
Yeah, it is. Get more people involved with killing snow geese, I think, is a great thing.
But, yeah, I do too. And, I mean, the hatch was down, so there's not a lot of juveniles, and all these guys are used to killing 400 a hunt or having trouble. And I'm like, guys, wasn't the whole idea of this thing to thin them out? They're tearing up the breeding ground. Wasn't that, like, the whole idea? I mean, why? There are people honestly upset that they're like, "Well, kill 56 snow geese." I'm like, "Well, isn't that good?"
Well, I don't know if you saw this because you were fishing last week, but on Duck South, you know, one of your favorite topics is piercing and tattoos. You always have great hot takes on those two topics. Well, last week, somebody posted a picture of a wood duck head right beside a guy's nipple.
That was beautiful.
I ask you, is it proper? Is it, if you don't incorporate your nipple into that tattoo some kind of way, you're just white trash, right?
What you have to do is turn that nipple into an acorn. You have to tattoo your nipple as an acorn, and the whole thing is done perfect. That's all you got to do. It shouldn't take, you know, 10, 15 minutes.
But do you agree with that, though? If you don't incorporate the nipple into the tattoo, you're white trash. You're just trashy.
You know, I don't know. That tattoo is amazing.
Because you're still trying to get visual points for both the tattoo and the nipple.
Yeah, you get visual points, but how many times do you walk around without your shirt on?
I think if you get a tattoo that's right next to your nipple a lot.
I think if you're going to get a cool, visible tattoo and you wanted people to see it, you get it like in the crack of your elbow where you can make it move. Like make it where the head bops down like it's eating, you know, like beep, beep, and then you can just pull your elbow up and down and have the wood duck move. Like, I mean, be an action tattoo. That would be the way to go. I mean, on your chest, I mean, what, you're going to be seen at Panama City for 4 days each summer and at the lake or the river, like, I don't know, 10 times a year?
Like, I think you're cutting your yard every time without a shirt.
You got to, but who's checking you out riding your lawnmower? I mean, you can ride your snapper up and down all you want, but people are driving by don't care what you have on your chest. It's a wood duck head. You got to get something that moves. Get it in your arm. Get it in your elbow crease or somewhere that's visible. Put it on your forearm, but make sure you have an acorn or something. I mean, you can't have a wood duck just sitting there. And it kind of had like the glamour shot to it look too. That I really appreciate that part of it. It had like the shadow and in the shade and everything.
Look, if any classy duck hunting women huntresses are listening to this, the ultimate tattoo would be to get the tornadoing ducks down into the crack of your ass.
I would like to. Ooh, that's nice. I wonder how many of the huntresses have. That would be a good poll to know how many tattoos the huntresses have. I would like to know that. And I have, look, before everybody gets all pissed off, I don't have any tattoos personally. I have no problem with them, and I've seen a lot of really cool ones. But I want to know how many of the huntresses have tattoos and where they're located. And piercings, those three.
See this. There's some revealing pictures if you want to do a 360 view of a lot of them out there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I would like to know. I just, now it's in my head. Sorry, I kind of got sidetracked there. Couldn't complete a sentence because I'm thinking about that too.
Well, see, I think the tornado and ducks into the crack would be great. I think there's nothing classier than some arrow pointing down in the front saying, you know, this is yours.
Yeah, but I mean, there's going to be some. I mean, there's going to be some people that have limits.
I bet that there are a lot of huntresses with hidden tattoos.
I want to know where Essie's has his.
You think he's got one?
He's got a Mississippi State duck tattoo. There's no question in my mind.
This should be good about 3 hours from now in our group message.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome, and it should be.
All right, Rob. I enjoyed it. I'll save these last two or three for next week. We've about run out of time. I don't think we didn't think we were going to spend that much time talking about the opening of duty for that long. So
it is a lot of duty yet down there.
Thank you again for being here this Monday. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.